Welcome to Beyond Better, a podcast that explores a simple but profound idea. We all deserve to live lives we love, and that includes our work lives too. I'm Stacey Ennis, an author and longtime location-independent entrepreneur living in Portugal with my family of four. Join me as I talk business, location independence, writing, travel, and so much more, all focused on building a life that is beyond better. I'm so excited this week to welcome Kristen Elworthy to talk all about PR and specifically how PR can work for us little gals and guys, you know, not big, huge companies, but people who are trying to launch books, build personal brands, or really make an impact through our stories, our ideas, our expertise. So let me give you a little intro to Kristen. Kristen Elworthy is the founder of Seven Hills Communications, which provides PR services to mission-based and female-founded companies, nonprofits, and personal brands. Kristen is passionate about helping people and brands tell their stories and affect change. Kristen is a lifelong Bostonian, and when she's not working, she's chasing around after three kids or hiding out and reading on her Kindle. Welcome, Kristen. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here to chat more.
Well, I invited you because I really believe in PR. I think it's very, very important for any business and definitely for personal brands. But it's something that most of us don't really think about and definitely don't budget for. So I just wanted to shed some light on that today, on the power of PR, what it is, and all of that. We'll get to that soon. But first, I wanted to start with your background, because I'm guessing as a little girl, you didn't say, I want to grow up and do PR. So where did that start with? What was your kind of young passion that led you to where you are today?
Yeah, so I did not know what PR was when I was a kid, but I was close. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a reporter and a journalist, which is actually what I did do for a while. So I used to have this newspaper that I would create called like the Neighborhood News in a very sleepy small town that I moved back to as an adult. And it's still pretty sleepy, although we have three papers. I don't even remember what I'd write, but I grew up during Operation Desert Storm, and I do remember writing about, you know, different things we would see at school and writing story, like kind of rewriting those stories, like with, you know, I don't know, a second or third grade lens on it. So, but I would actually sell the paper for like, I think 5 cents. My dad worked in software, so I had desktop publishing in like the early 90s. And so I would put it in with the clip art and I would sell it. And I think I sold ads to babysitters. So I sort of always had this, you know, business side to me that I'm from a family of entrepreneurs. So I went to college and grad school and worked at a newspaper for some time. In the worst time you could work at newspapers, like 07, 08, just not a great time to get into news. And over time, I eventually just realized like I have a little bit more of an entrepreneurial spirit and like kind of wanted that growth that I wasn't going to see without sacrificing like a tremendous personal life. And people who are high up in journalistic roles, they really sacrifice. And I love journalists. I think they do such an amazing service. But I just didn't see myself going long-term. So I moved into PR for a little while at an agency, and then eventually started consulting and launched my own business about 11 years ago.
So I'm sure listeners are hearing you talk about journalism as a pathway. You think about journalism as telling stories, right? Telling great stories or exposing the truth or sharing people, situations, you know, the news. But you don't often think about that as related as something that you could then kind of step over into PR. So draw that line for me. How do those connect?
Well, actually, a lot of journalists go to the dark side, as we call it. So a lot of journalists do take PR roles because you're right. Like you hit the nail on the head. We all understand storytelling. So the best PR people are typically good writers because we spend our days writing email pitches, writing press releases. Like there's so much more to PR than just pitching journalists. And writing is really key. And we also spend a lot of time on the strategy side, figuring out what people's or brand stories are. We are story driven at Seven Hills. So that's what we focus on. Like every, you know, client we take on, we pull the story out of it. And I really think my training as a journalist, the spot, what matters and what doesn't. And that's really like the essence of storytelling and what matters to a specific audience and what doesn't matter to them. So great PR really is about storytelling and then figuring out how you can tell that story to the right audience. You know, we're really fortunate that you mentioned in the intro, I focus on female founded and mission based brands and people. And I feel like my role is to elevate their stories, to get them heard in an environment where maybe they aren't otherwise heard. So in that way, you know, I'm no longer writing for papers or for magazines or whatever, but kind of facilitating those stories to be told. So we become like the messenger instead of, you know, the writer at that point. I think there's a lot, you'll find a lot of former journalists that moved to the dark side here in PR.
The dark side. So if somebody is hearing this and thinking, oh, that sounds awesome, I would love for, you know, my voice to be elevated, my ideas to get out there, but they're feeling maybe a lack of clarity or they're not exactly sure how to even begin to clarify their own story and tell their story, could you talk me through how you approach that type of situation with a client? How do you help them uncover what that story is so that it can be amplified and elevated?
Yeah, so I take a couple of approaches. The first one is I basically spend, you know, if we're, you know, working together, we'll spend an hour in a kickoff meeting and I'll literally interview them and kind of like, based on the research I've already done about them and the conversations we've already had, kind of figure out what makes them different and what is meaningful for them to share, right? So also what I always tell people, what I think is interesting may not be what you particularly care the world to know about you, and that's fine. So there's that balance between those two things. And then on the more kind of like strategic side, you know, thinking about who your audience is and who you want, like what your goals are in terms of what you want to get out of PR or getting your voice elevated and what would matter to that audience. And usually people have like a good solid idea of that. This is their story. Likely they've been in those shoes or they know those shoes very well because they've worked with, you know, that specific audience for a long time. And the final thing I always recommend people do, and I feel like this actually, you know, might be the first step for a lot of people who are DIYing, is look at your competitors or your friendly competitors or your peers in the space and see where they're talking. And that could be very aspirational. So, but I always say like, look at like the very aspirational people, right? The super, you know, super performers in the space, but also look at people that you see, you know, who you feel like, hey, like they're getting some opportunities. I'm not, like, where are they getting press if they're doing PR? That helps really generate some ideas as to where you might be, best suited to speak to. And then also like what story they're telling, like think about how where your parallel story is, what's different about you, but like, what are people picking up on that's interesting to them, if that makes sense to you. And then the last thing is just looking at news, like what are trends that are happening in the news, because you have your own personal story and brand, but frankly, your best shot in many cases is tying into, you know, what's top of mind for people. And last year that has been like rapidly evolving, but just being able to speak to some of the big kind of shifts, cultural shifts or work shifts going on, those types of strategies can help you define what your story is. And so just kind of thinking through all those little pieces and figuring out like, who are you in the middle of all of that? And what are kind of the couple of bullet points that define you and tell your story. If you can come up with like three or four bullets that are like, you know, the about me's that relate to all of those things I mentioned.
I love that. And I imagine that process of clarification also supports so many other things that person does.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I have a couple of clients who are like seed stage startups, and we talk all the time about how when we were going through the messaging for their launches or for their, you know, their press releases for their seed announcements, it really helped clarify their messaging and how they were talking about themselves. Because in the end, like, right, we're all in an echo chamber of our own teams a lot of times, or just our own brains, you and your spouse or partner, and you have to say like, whoa, like, does any of this mean anything to anybody else? And that is where PR comes in. I always tell people like, let's road test some things and see what resonates, like what people respond to, what reporters respond to. And if things are falling short or we're not getting feedback, I'm like, we're saying this wrong. Like something about what we're saying is not hitting right. So it is kind of like this like unofficial testing ground for your ideas. And you could also do that on social media and other like channels that you have to speak on, not just like regular media. But I do think it helps to really distill down like what you want to be saying in your emails, your website, really everywhere.
It's so interesting because I'm, as we record this, going through a visual rebrand, website redesign. I'm really rethinking my messaging, how I connect with people. And what you said about the echo chamber, I think, is dead on. What's so cool, in my view, about a separate PR person that's kind of outside of your team or that's, you know, not yourself doing your own efforts, is you get this new, fresh take on this thing that you're like, you know, it's like right in front of your face. You can't see anything anymore because it's you're way too close to it. And that outside voice that can help you clarify. But then the other piece that I think is really cool is that it can get tested very practically, which is not something that we typically have the opportunity to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's no tougher audience than reporters and editors, right? Because they get, I was just listening to a podcast with a reporter talking about how she got like 100 to 200 emails for pitches a day. So they're getting those. So like, I mean, your subject line on those matters. So we test those. And then like what you're saying in the first couple lines matters. And so that feedback that we get, if we're getting like amazing responses to a specific subject line, that kind of tells us something about what we're pitching out and that it's hitting with people. So yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It's important to road test it. And also sometimes what works for PR doesn't necessarily match like what would work on your website and stuff, but it does. I just think it's like a good exercise to go through.
So one of the things that I find with my students in my book writing program, Nonfiction Book School, or my individual clients, is that when they go to launch their next thing, whether, you know, they're launching a business or a brand or a book, there is so much in front of them. They need to, especially if they're brand new, put together, quote unquote, a personal brand, that's not really what it is. It's actually a lot of deep work and intentional thought. But, you know, form this personal brand. They need to put together a launch strategy and ongoing marketing. And it feels like so much. I've had so many conversations with people who just feel just flat out overwhelmed. They're just like, I don't even know where to start. And so I'm curious if you can give me a little bit of a view of what is PR in relation to an overall marketing strategy, and what pieces does a person need to have in place before they begin PR? Because I know you mentioned it's amplification, right? But you have to, I would imagine, have something to amplify. So can you talk a little bit about that, like order of operations, essentially?
Yeah. So PR is essentially, you know, a one-to-many communication channel. There are PR agencies that are larger than we are that do, you know, social and that do, you know, speaking and all that stuff as like major portions of their, you know, they have whole bureaus for them. We're small, or like a small team. And so we really hyper-focus on what is probably most people consider more traditional PR. So that is basically taking our clients and elevating their brand in target audience media, whether that's digital, print, TV, radio, podcasts, like that type of media. That's the work that we do. That's what most people think of when they think of PR, although it's, you know, quickly growing your own media, you know, your own blog, et cetera, is also part of your strategy. When we look at who we're working with, and the first two questions I typically ask them after we like, you know, gotten an idea of the brand is, who's your target audience and what are you trying to say to them? What's your message? So if you don't know those two things yet, I would say you're going to have a hard time with the PR strategy. You might find some PR people who will take you. I certainly would work through it with people, but like, what are your goals? What is your message? You know, who are you trying to reach? Like, if we don't understand that on our end, we can do lots of great outreach and get you hits, but it's probably not going to it's not going to get you like to where you want to be. So I would say that's what I would have in place. And then, you know, something to pitch. So obviously you need to be an expert in your field. You can start pitching. If you have a book coming out, we do projects with authors sometimes, and they start pitching before they're ready to talk about the book per se, just to start growing their platform. But they are experts. We have angles for them. you know, a good PR person will tell you. I tell people if I don't think we're ready yet. So you need to have that credibility in your field, whatever, for whatever reason, whether it's your personal backstory, things you've done with work. And then of course, like if you are, and you need a website, you need basic assets. Like you need your website. What's the call to action? If people are following you on social media, like that needs to be built out. So you kind of need those basic assets depending on what your goals are. But yeah, I always tell people like, let's not go for the PR stuff before you have a website and social, because you know, it's going all that. Where do people go from there to keep, you know, it's almost a wasted hit and you really only get one shot sometimes. So, yeah. So I would say just, it depends on what exactly your goals are, but the basic assets, basic understanding, like knowing yourself and knowing who you are is going to be really important to getting a good strategy together.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think just having, just to anchor back to it, this idea of amplification, I think that's a really powerful way to think about what PR can do for a brand. But at the same time, I would guess that you would agree with this. It doesn't have to be 100% perfect. Like everything doesn't have to be like perfect. That there is probably a place where your brand is solid enough. It's still, you know, you're still growing, you're still getting things together, but there's still something valuable there that can be amplified.
Absolutely. I think this is, I don't know who I'm stealing this from, but never let perfect be the enemy of good is something I tell people all the time. You know, yeah, I think you want to obviously put your best foot forward, but we work with clients all the time who are like, I'm finishing a website redesign. And I'm like, well, there's nothing really wrong with your current website. So you're fine. You know, we can start if you want. You know, if you have no website, I wouldn't start, but yeah, you're 100% right. And even if you're, you know, still developing your content or still figuring out exactly what your book's going to say, you know, there are other things that you're sure of. So like, what are the things you're certain of now? And with, you know, more product or brand, you know, companies that we work with, lots of times we come in like while they're still working out their timeline for announcements, or product launches. And there's so much groundwork you can do. So, you know, when you're talking to, if you're working with someone else on PR, you know, figure out like, what's that timeline to the lead up? What's the groundwork you can do to start building excitement or credibility or your platform? And that's a really, and then like, hopefully they're honest with you, like how long you actually, you know, you don't need 5 years of platform building before you do a book. For, if you have it, it's great, but you don't need 5 years of PR before you launch a book. So, you know, there's a happy medium in there somewhere with budget and with, you know, time put into it and stuff like that.
I love that. I love that quote too, because that's been something I have to remind myself over my 13 years in business, especially, you know, I reflect back and I kind of cringe sometimes at some of the things that I've, you know, put out into the world. Or I remember my first website that I launched back in like 2009 or something, had a typo on the homepage. I mean, there are just things that are not going to be perfect, but if you just wait for it to be perfect, it's, you know, it's just going to take forever and you're not going to get that amplification. So it's such a great, great tip. So one other thing I've heard you mention that some people might be wondering about is the phrase expert positioning. And I'm sure people can imply what that means. They understand what that means. But from your perspective, what is expert positioning? What do you do on a practical level to position someone as an expert? Let's say they've done all that clarifying. They know what their story is. They know who they're serving and want to reach. Talk to me about that journey of expert positioning.
Yeah. So, I mean, in our work, we're working with like kind of two different types of clients. One is like very explicitly selling something, right? It's a company, it produces a product, it's selling something. And the other is typically a personal brand where they might be selling a book at some point or a course or whatever, but they're really just trying to elevate their brand in their space. So whatever their niche is, whether it's, you know, in as a female entrepreneur or within the marketing, you know, niche or whatever, wherever they want their audience to be developed out. And so expert positioning is exactly what it sounds like. It's taking somebody who like basically has all of the expertise and showing everybody that they have it, right? So putting that, you know, the strategy we typically look at for this is tons of podcasts, basically what I'm doing today, right? Tons of contributed articles, some Q&As. It is very different than say a client with a product where we're pitching like gift guides and inclusion, you know, inclusion in like the top, you know, whatever, 10 items for your new baby or something like that. That's a very different type of pitch than saying, you know, pitching so-and-so, she's an expert in this area. Like, here are some things she can speak to. We had actually like an amazing kind of like mini campaign for a client that is a DEI consultant on Black women's equal pay day. And she's Black, and she had gone through some pay, you know, raise conversations in her early 20s. And she works, you know, now with companies on these issues. And we pitched her on both what companies can do to help facilitate, you know, pay equality, and also what individuals can do to facilitate their own pay equality. She got hits in the same day on like CNBC, Cheddar, BET, what was the other one, and HBR. And it was like, you know, that is exactly, she wasn't selling her services. She wasn't, you know, but that's like a perfect example of expert positioning. Like, she was just the right person at the right moment to talk about this. And we caught the day, and, you know, that's a great example of expert positioning, very like concentrated. And then the more kind of drumbeat is putting her on podcasts, having her have contributed pieces like over time, doing Q&As. And it's just like, now she got tons of feedback being like, I'm following you on LinkedIn now. That's what that did for her. So that kind of is like a real world example of how it works when it works, you know, really well.
That's such a great example. And to me, it comes back to serving your audience and really showing up to give them what they need versus, you know, talk about the things that you want to talk about, or really selling yourself, pitching yourself, you're pitching your expertise. And to me, it really connects with, especially with my clients and students who are writing books. One of the number one things that I see people do, I'll air quote this, wrong in outlining and writing their book is they forget about their reader. And they get so hung up on what they want to teach, what they want to tell, and they forget about that reader experience and what that reader needs. But when you stay really anchored to the reader, the person that you're writing the book for in the first place, it informs your decision making. I think it makes you a better writer. I think you make better content decisions. And definitely when you go to launch that book and you plan how to get that book in front of people, you know how to do that in a more powerful and effective way. And that kind of sounds like what you just described, but just with pitching, right? Instead of writing a book.
Exactly. I mean, in the end, also the story is better, right? Like, it's a better story if it's what, telling people what they want to hear, if it's answering questions, you know, and even with brand clients, like even with clients where we're pitching product, we actually, almost everybody, we take the founder and do expert positioning work with them, because I really do believe, like, no matter what you're doing now, people want to understand where their product, who they're supporting, and they want a face on everything. So, you know, it's not just personal brands that are doing this now. Like, we really try to bring that to everybody, because I think it's just a great way to like get exposure and to build relationships. And you do need to be thinking, when I pitch, I'm not thinking, I mean, of course, I'm thinking about what I want to get out of the pitch, but I'm thinking about like, how can I help this reporter, right? They don't really care. they don't care at all to promote the client. But if it's helpful to them, then they're happy to quote them. And so, and then when I always remind clients going into interviews, like, be helpful, you know, have your talking points, but in the end, like, this is just one interview and it could lead to more, and be helpful, like, help this person get to where they need to be on the story, like, within your own, you know, boundaries, obviously.
That's such great advice. I mean, that I would apply that to writing a book as well, especially if you're writing a how-to or a big idea book. It's really about like being helpful to your reader at the end of the day, like getting them what they need out of that book. So you've used, in talking about expert positioning, you use the word expert. And for a lot of people listening, that is a big word to own. They may very well be an expert, but they may have never called themselves that, or they might be a bit resistant to the idea of calling themselves that, of really owning, I'm an expert in blank. So I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about, like, when are they an expert? What are some signs that you might be in a place where you could position yourself as an expert in your industry? And why are people, do you think, kind of hesitant to embrace that? Because I've just seen it so much.
So I work with, you know, mostly women, and I think this is like a, you know, fairly uniquely women, female problem, although, you know, I see it with men too. But, you know, we are taught to be collaborative and be part of a team, which is important. But I do think it's like important for people to own what they do know and understand. And I also think a lot of us get to a point in our career where we look back and we're like, oh, look, like I know what I'm doing now. And I didn't realize that I, you know, spent the last 15, 20 years building this. But now that I'm looking back, like there's, so I look at this, look backwards. Are there a lot of people that can benefit from what you have to say? So the example I used of our client before on Black Women's Equal Pay Day, she said like, this is the impact she's been wanting to make forever. I think she's, you know, she's maybe 20 something years into her career. And she's like, I got all these emails from like younger women saying like, I am using these and this was so helpful to read. So, you know, you look back and see if what you have to say would be helpful to people that are coming up the way you came up, that if that's your audience. Also take a look at the landscape. And I don't think we need to compare ourselves. There's always going to be like rock stars in the field or people who are like kind of the big gets in the field. But there's plenty of room for other people. And so take a look around and see, you know, how are your peers promoting yourself? What kind of credibility do they have? And then like, what do you have to say? If you have something to say that is useful and that is grounded in experience or research or reality that you know, to me, like that, there is an opportunity for you to, you know, promote yourself as an expert in that area. I also think bouncing it off a third party and talking about if they find you credible is helpful, whether that's your PR person, whether it's, you know, a colleague, you know, and then there is like, it's kind of chicken and egg, right? So to be an expert, you kind of have to establish yourself as an expert. So start writing, you know, for your own personal channels. Maybe if there's industry stuff that you can do, industry speaking, podcasts, like work your network. Most people have a friend who's a podcaster now, like get on shows, you know, start doing some of that low hanging fruit stuff so that you can start establishing your credibility. And then it's sort of all like is a freight train from there. Like one thing builds on the next. And you probably start believing it of yourself a little more as you see other people, you know, wanting to hear what you have to say.
So true. And it's something that what your piece of advice about beginning to write about it, talk about it, I think even calling yourself, you don't necessarily have to say I'm an expert in, but really owning a really strong title for yourself within your industry. I often advise new solopreneurs, new business owners who are having trouble finding work or having trouble attracting interest in their brand or having trouble winning clients, that, I mean, essentially what you're talking about is content marketing, to get out there and begin talking, writing, and really positioning yourself as an expert simply through creating content that makes you sound really smart, that makes you sound like you really know what you're talking about.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, saying it out loud too, like almost creates some level of accountability. My husband's an entrepreneur and he started his company like a little over a year ago. And I remember when he first started, he was working full-time at the time and doing this on the side. I remember when he first started talking about it, it kind of created this like timeline where we're like, now we're talking about it. So we need to make sure it happens. And I do think that is the same thing. Like if you start talking about it, it's scary. It's like a weird feeling, but you create some accountability for yourself in continuing to build on your own credibility.
Yes. So powerful. I love that. So let's talk about authors for just a moment. I know you work with a number of authors who are launching their books, and I'm curious if you can talk a bit about some of the strategies you've used with authors to help them get their work in front of readers.
Yeah, so with authors, we really focus on expert positioning. Having a book coming out is super helpful for getting, you know, the why now. So there's always when you're pitching, there's the what it is and then the why now. We pitch evergreen stuff all the time, but it is definitely harder to like nudge that along, right? Because there's lots of urgent things coming down the pike. So if we say like, you know, there's a book and it's publishing whatever, October 5th, that creates like, you know, a little bit of urgency around the pitch. But even before the book, we'll work with authors before they even have a pub date to start building their platform. And our strategy is typically to take what's in the book, what are the messages in the book, and like, let's figure out how we can pitch different angles or pitch into trends on those. You know, the Great Resignation is a huge trend right now. Obviously, remote work was a trend last year that we had clients who could speak to. So we would pitch them to talk about like their niche in that larger theme, if that makes sense. And lots of contributed pieces, lots of podcasts. It is harder to get like profiles and Q&As before a book's coming out. As we get closer, like sending out those books to reviewers and doing more focused podcast pitching to get stuff happening like during launch. But I really recommend starting with, you know, contributed pitches. So stories you're writing for other people or like how-tos or, you know, op-eds basically that you're writing for other people, not for yourself, for other platforms. And then podcasts are a great way. I have bought so much stuff off podcasts and so many books because when people are in your ear for 30 minutes and you get to know them, you just
totally want to
do it. So yeah, so that's really the start. That's like, and every strategy is a little different, depends on the timing of the book and what the, you know, how universal the message is and who the audience is. I mean, some of them are really specific and the big wins are in small niche outlets and other ones are really broad and the big wins are in like those big tier ones.
So there may be people listening that are like, oh my gosh, I need Kristen so much. And there might be other people listening that recognize they don't really have a budget for PR quite yet, or they want to do a little bit of initial DIY work before they take a big step with a PR agency like yours. What are some tips that you can give people for DIY PR just to get started?
Yeah. So, you know, some of the stuff we've already gone over, I would sit down and take some time to think about like your audience, you know, bullets of what you want to say and how you're going to say it. That's really your pitch, right? Like, think about the trends that you're seeing affecting the news right now. I mentioned the Great Resignation's we would do a lot of career and workplace and employer based stuff. So that's always, you know, top of mind for us. Women in the workplace is a big one for us. But there's lots of things. It depends on the industry you're in. There might be like tech trends that you can tap into and things like that. So start there, really like brain dump it all on paper. And then, like I said, do a competitive landscape, see where other people are getting featured. That's like a great initial media list. Where did everybody else that you want to be like, or that you feel like are kind of like in your orbit, where are they getting features? And just start there, like build a spreadsheet out, find those contacts. Most of them can be looked up online and start to engage with them if you can, follow them on LinkedIn or Twitter. And then really just start pitching yourself. So create short emails that are like, this is who I am. This is what I can speak to. Here are three bullets of basically what I have to say about it. And send those to editors or you're looking for like the contributions editor or the podcast host. Start reaching out and see what happens. That's really where I would start. It does require some time and people will say, I sent 6 pitches and I'm like, I didn't hear anything back. And I'm like, we literally will pitch 100 people on something to get it placed. So don't feel bad. Don't get discouraged. They're getting, like I said, dozens of emails into their inbox every day, but just like follow up, look for new places, shift your perspective, like just experiment a little bit and see if you can get a few things placed and start with people, you know, you may know some people in your network who can, you know, make some connections for you too. So that's a good place to start.
I love that point about, you know, you might not get anybody who bites on 6 pitches. It's so funny because when I started my business, I guess I was about a year in, I set this goal of writing 30 queries, like article pitches essentially in 30 days, which is a lot of work because you have to read like the latest issue of the publication. You want to go back to past ones, you need to look at their editorial calendar, you need to write a thoughtful pitch for the publication. I was trying to write for magazines and I think some sites. And so each pitch probably took me a couple hours to do, but I did that over a 30-day period. 29 of those, I never even heard back from them. Nobody even replied to me. But one of them replied. They didn't give me an article, but they did give me a part of a book. So I wrote part of a book. And that relationship then down the road, a couple years later, they gave me my first book deal. And so, because it was a publisher. And so I think that idea of just sticking with it and knowing that you might not even hear back from anyone, you might feel like you're pitching out into the void, but maybe there will be that one that just clicks and you form a relationship and it can lead to some really cool things.
Yeah. So I think I forget that people hear back on emails, like normal people, because reporters, like, they are inundated, and usually, like, silence is a no. We'll do a follow-up, and sometimes we'll be like, hey, thanks so much for, like, putting this at the top of my inbox. I, like, meant to reply to you. But usually, like, I take a no response as a no. We do, you know, some, we have a tool where we can see if, you know, they've opened it or not sometimes. So that's helpful. Like, just, you know, okay, like, it's been read, they're just not interested. It doesn't work for them. It's like, I don't take it personally. And no one should. Like, there's just a lot of good ideas out there, and there's, you know, only so many places they can go. And that's why it's so rewarding to get those placements. And the other thing, just a little hack on your 30 and 30 days, like, you definitely want to customize your pitch per writer, but it is helpful to have some boilerplate stuff written, right? So I find it's like a lot less overwhelming if you're like, okay, I have a few ideas for articles. This is kind of like the one line and the bullets for those ideas. Here's my like two line bio. Now I'm going to write like an intro, a few sentences, and then I'm going to put my idea into the rest. It feels so much less overwhelming to people to be able to do that. So definitely consider like sitting down and doing like a brain dump and coming up with like four or five different article ideas and like formatting them. So you can just paste them into an email when you see an opportunity. That's the other thing. Sometimes you're on LinkedIn and you see like, oh, this person just got this publisher. I could do something like that. I should reach out to this editor. And then if you have that stuff in your back pocket, it becomes much less of an overwhelming task. And you're just, you know, copy pasting, doing a little intro takes you like maybe 15, 20 minutes to do.
Such great advice. And to your point, when I was running Sam's Club magazine, you know, we had 11 million readers. I got a lot of pitches. The emails that I got that were like tomes, they were so long. I didn't read them. I would read the first couple sentences, and it wasn't because I didn't want to be kind or whatever. I just didn't have time. I didn't have time to read 10 paragraphs on this idea that they had. But so the first few sentences, I would decide if I was going to keep reading, and then a couple more sentences, I would decide if I was going to keep reading. But usually at that point I would abandon it because it was just too long. But the ones that were short, to the point, compelling, really clear expert, and we had a wide variety. You know, we had celebrities from Oprah to, you know, more niche celebrities. And then we had, you know, kind of everyday people that would contribute as well. But just understanding that that person has something of value and could solve my problem of filling this article with a valuable piece of content. But short, sweet, to the point, clarity versus verbose, like I did when I first started my business. You know, that was obviously years before I had this other experience. But that short and simple, I think, but enough probably. Is that, I mean, am I right on that and how you pitch that?
Yeah, for experts in particular, like I try to do kind of like a couple sentences of like, if we're doing, say, a contributed piece pitch or even a podcast, like this is what they have to say. And like, here are like basically the points they'll make, just so they know why they're different than maybe 10 other pitches are getting on that topic, and how they differentiate themselves, what their point of view is. And even for interviews, a lot of times we'll do that. Just, it gives people, occasionally I'll just literally send, I've had really great success with a realtor client of ours who's like kind of a millennial real estate expert. And we'll literally send kind of like bite-sized quotes responding to trends or reports, and people just pull them and put them in. You know, sometimes we'll get a reply asking for more or an interview or something exclusive, but a lot of times they're just really looking for, you know, a quick little something to put in there from some real person or real realtor, and not, you know, not having to make 20 phone calls to get it. So it's all about like just really tracking what's going on and trying to be on top of it, which can be challenging if you're, you know, have a business to run or you have a job or other things happening. So I just say, try to devote a few hours a week to it if you can, or whatever time it is, and like block that time off for yourself, and like kind of commit to doing that. And then, you know, I think it does eventually get easier, and you just kind of, it's like a muscle you build over time.
Are there any subscription services or tools that you would recommend? I know there's, I don't know if you say Haro or Haro or however you, the help a reporter out. Maybe tell people what that is. And are there any other places that people could be looking for opportunities?
Yeah. So most of the tools that we use, you know, industry-wide are pretty expensive, like journalism databases, like Muckrack or Cision, stuff like that. Would not recommend them for individuals, but Haro is free. It's called Help a Reporter Out. It's like an email digest. It comes three times a day. Various, you know, reporters from every different kind of outlet you can think of, from the New York Times to places you've never heard of, looking for different sources on topics. I am a little, I only answer Haros for clients if they are on the nose, if they are like so perfect for them, because they get a ton. So they have to be really perfect for me to spend my time answering them. I do read them because I feel like they're really good for trend spotting. So you can kind of see what people are writing about right now, or even like spot someone who's writing about something in your area, but is not writing about your specific thing, and put them on your list to reach out to and introduce yourself. There's also a new one called Quoted with a W. And that, I think it's a little more expensive, but there is a free version that you could do like 3 pitches a month. And I'm hearing good things from reporters on that. It's kind of like a Haro, just like a newer way of doing it. You create a little profile and there's like, it's almost like matchmaking, like a Tinder for journalists. So there's that. And then, you know, I just recommend, some podcasts. I actually was just listening to one called One Pitch. And they interview a different journalist every single week. And that journalist talks about like what they want to hear, how they want to get it. And so if you scroll through, you can take a look, and if there's anyone applicable to you, like listen. And if they're close, I just think it's so helpful to hear what they're going through, what their process is, to educate yourself on that. And everyone's a little bit different, of course. And like, you'll hear one person say like, I hate this. And another person say, I love this. And it's like, which one do you do? But, you have to use your judgment, but it is helpful just to like understand the industry a little bit and like what they're facing in their inbox every day, which is massive numbers of pitching. But they'll explain, they'll search by keywords. So make sure you have those keywords in your pitch, and stuff like that. So just kind of look for those. Anytime you can see a Q&A with a journalist, I think it's super helpful to listen in.
That's great. And I'll be sure to drop all of those in the show notes as well so that people can learn more. Kristen, thank you so much. This has been super helpful. I learned a lot. I'm sure listeners did too. Can you tell our listeners where to find out more about you and what's going on with Seven Hills right now?
So you can come to sevenhillscommunications.com to reach out if you want. I'm happy to always like hop on the phone for 30 minutes and help people kind of work through what they might be able to do, even if they're not ready for PR yet. And same handles on, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. But we're really expanding into really focusing on female founders, mission-based businesses, female brands. And so the work we're doing right now has, what's been most exciting is where I've seen a huge shift in the last year to people who are willing to elevate those. We have some clients that are like little small businesses that are getting, we have one coming out in Bloomberg Business Week next month with a video feature, and they're like a small toy company.
Led by
a South Asian female founder. And you know, those voices were getting kind of not elevated for a long time. So I am so encouraged to see that shift. And I do think there's a lot of opportunity for people that maybe weren't getting press before to kind of start to capitalize on that as well, and start to, you know, we'll have a more diverse like media coverage as a result. So not really something we're doing, but I just have seen that shift and that trend. And it's super exciting for me as, you know, having done this for the last decade.
Well, thank you so much for your time, your energy, your wisdom, your expertise. It's been so much fun connecting with you. And I just really appreciate your time, Kristen.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
This podcast is produced by me, Stacey Ennis. Special thanks to Daniel Alexander for sound editing and Catherine Fishman for project support. These two make the show possible, and I'm grateful. You can always access show notes, including any links mentioned in this episode, at stacyennis.com/podcast. And you can connect with me at stacyennis.com, on Instagram at Stacey Ennis, or on Facebook at Stacey Ennis Creative. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Here's to building lives that are beyond better.